John, I made a video off of your the video or the experiment you wanted me to look at. So, and I was going to send it to you because I also misspoke yesterday, and like a, you know, like a man, I wanted to correct myself, but then I saw you were live, so I figured I'd come in here and do it to my to your face that way.
You know, yeah, that's fine. I don't check my TikTok like ever. So if you tagged me in something, I won't see it because I don't check my notifications like ever, unfortunately.
Well, I believe my point still stands, but I did misspeak yesterday when I said the longest running evolutionary experiment, the E. coli could not metabolize glucose. They can, it's just not at the same rate after they can do it in. So like I said, my point still stands because it's not superior, still inferior, but they still do have the ability. So I wanted to correct myself on that.
Sure, that's fine. How much time do you have?
I actually don't know. So, I mean, I might stay for a little while, and then if I have to run, I'll let you know.
Okay, so yesterday when we started talking, you had said something that I wanted to talk about, but, like, the subject got changed to something else. Okay. So you make this argument that you can't prove that anything in the fossil record ever evolved. Do you remember saying that?
Yeah, you can't use bones, is what I said.
Yeah,
you have to be able to prove that that bone did something. You know, I can make an argument that that bone is the last of its lineage and it didn't have any children.
Yeah, you could do that, and that does happen. There are things called end branches on the tree of life, like placoderms and pterosaurs and ichthyosaurs. Like we know of all kinds of them, but you absolutely can prove, in the scientific sense, that something in the fossil record is both a product of evolution and also has descendants that lived on too. So by prove, in the scientific sense, that just means find evidence for. Now, there are weak proofs predicated on not much evidence, but then there are extremely strong scientific proofs that are predicated on a lot of evidence. And the key thing is that evidence comes from a bunch of different disciplines, but all of the evidence, even across different scientific fields, all says the same thing. To call that a mere coincidence, I don't think is super tenable. So I'm just going to ask if you get what I mean so far.
Yeah, I kind of see where you're going. I wouldn't say that it's illogical. If you see a monkey that's fossilized and it looks just like the monkeys today, then I don't think it's illogical to say that that monkey is a descendant of regular monkeys today. I don't think that's illogical. But if you're going to say, like the example, I don't know if you used it or someone else used it, that we know that dolphins evolved from horses because we know their nose moved up on top of their head, like was brought up yesterday. That's just simply shapes, and no, that you cannot prove that lineage of something that we don't see today. Because if we see it today, then that's a logical argument. If we don't see it today, then I could just as easily and just as logically, if we're both being fair, I could say that's the end of that lineage.
Okay. Like, I hear what you're saying, but I super don't agree, and it takes a little bit of time, but I can get you through this. First of all, nobody says that whales evolved from horses. horse evolution and whale evolution are different. Well, if somebody said that, then they misspoke and people misspeak. But whales evolved from a hoofed animal, but it's they're not even very closely related to horses, actually. So
you're going to bring up Ambulocetus?
I would use Pachycetus, Ambulocetus, Bacillosaurus, Derudon, and then modern whales. And then I would also point to artiodactyls and the genetic record and the astralgus. So there's a lot of things to talk about. I wish I could pull up some pretty pictures, but I think that I should be able to get some of them here. I'll just have to get creative with my Googling. Anyways, so the thing about you can't prove that an organism ever, like a bone doesn't prove anything other than an animal died. That's the Kent Hovind classical argument. But I think that's really silly, because if we find the fossil of something, we ask ourselves, how did that fossil, or why is there a fossil in the first place? Why even is there an organism? The answer to that is, well, there's a couple things we can imagine. If we find a fossil, do you think it's actually reasonable to assume that's probably the only member of that animal species that ever existed?
I could agree that that's not reasonable to assume, but right. You would also have to agree that if we're talking facts, you have to make an assumption. You have to assume that bone had children and that had children that lived. And
you don't have to assume it about that one. So, and it's kind of already uncovered here. So no, nobody would think it's reasonable that if we find a fossil of an organism, that's the only one that ever existed. Instead, it's a member of a species. It's a member of a species. So a whole bunch of individuals of it existed. Now, where did they come from? Mommy and daddy making babies, right? In the case for animals, most animals, I guess.
Right. When you say things like nobody, that's an argument from majority. When you just stated somebody, like Ken Hovind, just absolutely disagrees with you. So I'd kind of stay away from arguments from majority.
Well, Ken Hovind is a nobody, first of all. But anyways.
Okay, you're still using an argument from majority, brother. It's a logical fallacy.
It's only a logical fallacy. So logical fallacies are just ways of pointing out that a deduction, like a deductive argument, doesn't necessarily follow.
Okay, well, then I'll use
the If I say the vast majority of scientists agree on something, I'm not being fallacious. That's not fallacious at all to do that.
At one point in history, did the vast majority of scientists believe that the Earth is flat?
No.
Yes. Not all of them, but yes. Majority of them.
Your Bible says it's flat, but scientists never thought that. It was a very common belief in the pre-scientific age, but proto-scientific early Greeks demonstrated that the Earth is a sphere pretty convincingly. Okay, but anyways.
Well, then let me change the argument. If they believed it was flat, would that mean that was truth? That's what we call an authority argument. That's another logical fallacy.
Arguments from authority are fallacious if the authority has... if the person claiming authority actually has no relevance to the topic. Okay, so if you say this guy that's a PhD proved that the Big Bang isn't true, but his PhD, but he's a dentist, then that is a horrendous and accurate example of an argument from authority. But anyways, I just want to talk about the bones here.
And so, I think you're a very educated person. I had a great conversation with you yesterday. But you're now defending things that are absolute logical fallacies. So if we're going to use logical fallacies, everybody agrees with me and you're wrong, I win.
I'm not defending fallacies. I'm describing to you when something is and isn't a fallacy.
Well, if I did not use logical fallacies on you yesterday, which I did not use, if I'm going to grant you the ability to use a majority, which is a logical fallacy, then I'm going to appeal to the biggest majority and say God, and I don't think you would like that very much.
God's not a majority.
Authority. I used the majority at first. Now I'm using authority. So if we're going to use an authority argument, an argument from authority, which is a logical fallacy, then I'll say God did it, and I don't think you would agree with that very much. So I would like that we stay away from logical fallacies.
If I'm appealing to scientists, I'm not making an argument from authority. If you want to understand something about the natural world, science has the most unprecedented successful track record of that.
And the most jacked up track record on both sides. They might know a lot too, but they mess up more than they know.
Your book says the Earth is flat, so like who's...
No, it doesn't. My book doesn't.
No, it literally does.
No, it literally doesn't. That's not what it's referring to when it says that, but I don't want to get into a biblical argument with you.
I mean, okay. Let me grab something real quick. After more than 1,000 debates, I've compiled all the knowledge you need to debunk the arguments you hear from my guests into a book. Rational Answers to Stupid Questions covers evolution, the Big Bang, creationism, flat Earth, and more. Order using the link below, and I will personally sign and ship you a copy today. But misinformation comes in many forms. My other book, Facts That Aren't True, debunks hundreds of false claims ranging from the human body, history, nature, animal facts, and more. I promise you'll find something in here that you've been wrong about for years. Okay, anyways, getting back to the bones. So, we agree that if we find an organism, that organism is one of many, and it gets there by reproducing. So, while we can't say with any kind of real certainty if the particular individual we found had any offspring, because it's a member of a population, that means it got there through reproduction. So other members of that group are going to leave descendants behind because that's where it came from in the first place. Now, it is true that sometimes organisms go extinct, but we're not talking, when we're talking about evolution, we're not often talking about organisms that are extinct. We're talking about, especially if we're dealing with fossils, we are asserting, because this is a counter-argument used to claim that a certain fossil is a transitional species. So that's really the only time that that example is ever used. But anyways, if we talk about whales, which I really actually want to talk about. So we have Pachycetus, we have Ambulocetus, we have Bacillosaurus, and we have Dorudon, and then Artiodactyls, and we got to talk about some bones here. So anyways, if evolution's true, then whales are a really interesting example because whales are mammals and all of the other mammals live on land. So that means that whales had to evolve from being a land-dwelling creature to living in the water, right?
Yeah, if it was true, that would have to happen.
So we got to try to find evidence of that. So we try to look for some transitional forms. Now, with respect to Ambulocetus, let me pull that up here. Ambulocetus, and then we're also going to have Bacillosaurus. I want to look at Bacillosaurus. Okay, so I fully sympathize with the idea that somebody would look at Ambulocetus right here, and they would be like, that doesn't look like a whale. I 100% agree with you that this does not look like a whale, okay? However, if somebody looked at Bacillosaurus, I would actually be like, it would be weird to me if somebody said that that wasn't a whale. It just so clearly is, right?
This is not my topic. I'll have to say, I'm not educated in the whale evolution.
Well, I mean, so far all we're doing is just looking at it and thinking to ourselves, does this thing look like a whale? And it just so clearly does, right?
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. If that's I guess you could say it looks like a whale. It looks like a very long, weird-looking whale, but...
It does have weird proportions, yes. So if Bacillosaurus is a transitional whale, then there are key hallmarks it has to have between whatever it evolved from and the way whales are today. And then we also need to see that with Ambulocetus too. So one of the key hallmarks is actually in their teeth. So, man, I'm trying to get a better picture of the teeth.
I appreciate it, man. And I'll continue to listen. I'm not going to be able to add too much to the whale conversation, but I will say the reason why I stay away from bones on mine is because at the end of this, no matter what evidence you're going to bring, it's going to be two things. One, it's going to be assumptions because you have to assume when it comes to bones, you have to assume. You can't prove it. And two, it's going to be, hey, these shapes look alike, so therefore it evolved.
Yeah, but what we're going to do is we're going to connect many, many, many different things together. So this is Ambulocetus's skull.
Assumptions or shapes. That's what I'm telling you. Assumptions or shapes. This has the same looking teeth as this animal, so therefore it come from that animal.
Right, so that would be one line of evidence. But anyways, so mammals have this really specific thing called heterodonty, which means we have more than one kind of tooth. We have molars, incisors, premolars, canines, all that good stuff. So Ambulocetus really clearly has this. This isn't a great picture, but the front teeth are pointy and stabby. And then the back teeth, they're shaped like a maple leaf in a way. They're actually kind of fascinating like that. Now, modern toothed whales don't have heterodonty. They just have one kind of tooth. But if we look at Bacillosaurus, if we look at its skull, and TikTok keeps shutting off my, when I try to share a web page, it keeps shutting it off. So, because it thinks that I'm, I don't know, it views that as like a, whatever. So there's a 3D rendering, but this is what the teeth look like. So we have something that's definitely a whale, but it has the same tooth structure as the thing we're claiming is a transitional form of it, the Ambulocetus, right? So if whales did evolve from land creatures, this is one of those things that has to be the case. And we absolutely do see that. Another key thing in the bones for Bacillosaurus is that, unlike modern whales, Bacillosaurus has hind legs, which is extremely bizarre. Modern whales don't have them. But the other thing about the legs that's really interesting is that they have all the exact same proportions as regular legs used for land locomotion. Because there's something called what do you call this? I don't remember. There's a term for it. But when a bone gets used for a specific purpose, what happens is the bone gets super highly modified. So whales are fat. We can all agree with that, right?
Yeah.
So whales have to propel. Now, they do quite a lot of it with their tail fluke, but they have so much mass and they use their front flippers for mechanical advantage. So what happens is their arm bones are extremely short and extremely thick. That's what gives them so much mechanical advantage. It's the exact same way with moles, because they burrow into the dirt. So moles have really that picture is tiny. Moles have really strong, really thick. Yeah, it's cutting it off for some reason, but moles have really strong, really thick arms. But then their legs are just these puny little things. So we see in Bacillosaurus, its hind legs aren't being modified for any particular purpose. They're just getting smaller so they can get out of the way, right? So those are two extremely important things. But then the final thing here, this takes a little while, but we're almost there. Let's see if I can find a good picture of it. There's a bone in your foot called the astragalus, and in certain animals, which are the ungulates, certain ungulates, artiodactyls, their astragalus has, I can't really get a good picture of it here. Do I have one in my book? Yeah, here, let me see if I can. Eocene whale talus, okay, let me look this up real quick. Eocene whale talus. Nope, that's not coming up with anything. Here we go. Okay, so modern whales, today's living whales, don't have these bones at all. The only bones they have in that region, they have some of their hip bones still, but they don't have any leg bones anymore. But Bacillosaurus still does, and what we find is it has this really specific arrangement for the, it's the talus bone, but they also call it the astragalus, whatever, where it has two articulating ends. Now, the only other animals that have that are even-toed ungulates. That's why it says, so pronghorn antelope is an example of that. And if we go and look at those things that don't look like whales, which would be like Ambulocetus and Pachycetus, they have hooves. They don't look like whales, but they have that bone. They have the same teeth that Bacillosaurus does. They have the same bone in the leg that Bacillosaurus does. Modern whales don't have either of those, but Bacillosaurus does. So it's just the perfect example of a transitional form. And then, I promise I'm almost done. Then the final thing that is just so overwhelmingly convincing of this is, okay, if whales evolved from some other kind of mammal that it eventually turned into a fully aquatic mammal, then that means that we would be able to test that genetically. So if all this stuff about whales used to be animals with hooves that lived on land, or they evolved from an animal that lived on land that had hooves, then that's what whales should be most closely related to today. And they are. They're most closely related specifically to hippopotamuses. And that is my TED Talk. Are you muted? Oh, yeah. Wait. Yeah, you're muted. I didn't mute you, but you're muted.
I know. I'm sorry. I was talking to my daughter. My dogs went crazy, so I didn't want to start talking while they were barking on top of this. But at the end of the day, just like I said, that's an impressive slideshow you did there. But one, we have to make some assumptions. We have to assume that that bone had children. And then two, we have to...
Hey, they are going crazy.
Yeah, I had my daughter. She's getting me something here so I can... use it as an example. Thank you. Now, I don't have a spork with me, but I want you to imagine something. I've actually found the evolution of a fork. You see, it actually started off like this, okay? And then for training purposes, and I apologize, I don't have a spork, but I want you to imagine now I'm holding up a spork.
Right.
And you see, it's got the smooth edges.
It's half spoon, half fork.
And the ridges... You know, it allowed the spoon to evolve farther, and then finally it finished with a fork. You see how I'm just using shapes and then telling you how they evolved?
Yeah, but my idea, there's two big differences. One, spoons don't have babies. Organisms do. But two, my idea is testable. The bones, in my example, were the equivalent of you like showing the spoon and the fork or whatever, forky spoony. I've seen you've played knifey spoony before. Anyways, but my idea is testable. It's testable through genetics, and the genetics confirms it. So when you have two completely separate fields that say exactly the same thing, that is, there's a word for that. I can't remember. It's a fancy word. I always forget what the word is. I'm going to look it up. But that is where coincidence is just not an appropriate response to me.
Right. So when you say all these things line up, one, the other side of that argument would be intelligent design, obviously. Just like I said yesterday with our genetics, my genetics and the genetics of an ape who has a hand just like me is going to be identical in some parts because it's building the same structures. For example, the DNA is a code that tells our body how to build things. Like, so the DNA in my body that tells my body how to build a hand is going to be identical in a monkey because it builds the same kind of hand. So we're going to have millions of similarities in our genetic code. That's still evidence for common design. Now, the other factors that you put in there and say, well, it lines up with this, but yes, this is again why I say you cannot use bones is because you have to start off with an assumption. No matter...
Yeah, but the assumption is testable.
It's the best assumption in the world, and it's the greatest assumption in the world. Still an assumption.
Yeah, but it's testable.
It's testable.
Through the genetics. And the word I was looking for is consilience, which isn't that fancy of a word, but I don't know.
Yeah, but
the problem with intelligent design is that intelligent design is testable and falsifiable, and it pretty much always gets falsified.
Well, after the fall, I would agree with you, but then we have an answer for that. That's why. But I didn't want to come on here and debate the Bible. But I mean, that's the reason.
You're thinking that I'm thinking the fact that we get cancer is evidence of unintelligent design. That's not what I meant at all. Intelligent design, because you said, look, the reason the genetics are similar is because of common design. There's absolutely no reason to think from a creation standpoint that a dolphin should have more genetically in common with a hippopotamus or a kangaroo, but they do have a lot in common. The animal or animals that are most similar to a dolphin would be like sharks, especially. It's almost any kind of fish, not any kind, but quite a lot of fish, right? But sharks are probably the best example. Now pick something that's radically different than a dolphin, like a kangaroo. So you can test intelligent design from the standpoint of DNA here, and it just completely gets falsified because the dolphin and the kangaroo are orders of magnitude more similar genetically, even though structurally they have almost nothing in common except their like internal organs, versus the dolphin and the shark. So if design is supposed to be, if the genetics is a hallmark of intelligent design, then we should find it in organisms that have a similar design, and we absolutely don't find it.
I don't agree with that argument whatsoever. I think that
agree with? Because whales are more closely genetically to kangaroos than sharks.
Genetic. I think the design of the kangaroo works just fine. They're still around, aren't they? What's wrong with their design?
If you're going to say that genetics is a hallmark of design, then you have to see convergence between genotype and phenotype. However, we don't. I mean, you do in some cases, but when you broaden your taxonomic brackets, all of the mammals are more similar to each other than any mammal is to anything else genetically. That just falsifies the creation idea, because you wouldn't, if the DNA and the way the animal appears are both products of design, then you don't design two animals that are extremely similar with completely different genetics. And where instead, the kangaroo, there's nothing translatable from a kangaroo to a dolphin, but they have the more similar genetics than the dolphin and the shark.
So here's what I'll say to that. One, I'm not a genetic DNA guy. So half of the stuff you're saying, I'm going to just say I don't know about. I'm not educated in. So you're going to sound a lot more convincing than I will in this field because I'm not. Here's what I can say. When we had this conversation yesterday, you asked me to go look at a study that absolutely proved genetic information gain. I did that from a study that you gave me, and it exactly proves the exact opposite. So why should I believe you now when I don't know what you're talking about now? And it is, you're saying that it's fact, but when I didn't know what you were talking about yesterday and you cited the source, and when I looked at it, the source already pre-existed, so it didn't gain any information that you claimed. So why should I believe you now?
Are you talking about the lactose thing? They deleted the gene for metabolizing lactose from the bacteria, and then it regained the ability to they got rid of the entire lac operon from the bacteria, and then it regained the ability to digest it. So
that's where you're right and you're wrong in the same. Do you know that it already had another gene called the EBGA gene, and it already had the ability to digest lactose? So what happened was is they removed the LACZ gene, you are correct, and they believed, they didn't know at the time what they thought, that the EBGA gene was completely dysfunctional, basically. So they removed the LACZ gene, and this thought that they removed the entire ability for it to digest lactose. But the EBGA gene remained, and it does have the ability to produce or to digest lactose. All granted, it is inferior. So most of the bacteria, the EBGA gene, could not digest enough lactose to keep the E. coli bacteria alive. So most of them died out. Although there was a small population that had the EBGA gene to digest lactose that was able to stay alive, and then that trait got encouraged. So there's no new information there. It did it through information loss, which is what I predicted yesterday. So I looked at the study you provided, and the gene that they left in there absolutely has the ability to digest lactose. And then it just got encouraged.
Well, that even if that was the case, that wouldn't be a loss of anything. That would be a gain.
When I say loss, it lost the LACZ gene. Now, granted,
yeah, we
pulled it out. We pulled it out. But then that caused the EBGA gene, which was already there, to have to work harder. And then through selection, we encouraged the trait that already existed. So there's no new information there. That's the study you asked me to look into, which I did.
If the gene mutates and now the bacteria has the ability to digest lactose, where normally the beta galactosidase, however you say that, if the organism changed, the organism has to evolve somehow. Like if its DNA is changing, it's evolving. The only way for this gene, this EBGA gene, which normally has virtually no activity with lactose, even if that gene mutate or compensated to be able to help the bacteria digest lactose, that's only if the gene changes. It has to mutate. That is adding information, and that is evolution through new information. Even if we're going to say it's a modification of a gene that's already there, that's still new information.
And this is where we're going to disagree, like we did yesterday, when you're going to claim that a duplication of something is new, and then I'm going to say no, and then you're going to use the example of new information of, you know, if I change the word in a paragraph, is it new information? Well, my point is, and I can ask you very simply, did the EBGA gene have the ability to digest lactose? Yes or no? And the answer is yes. So when they removed the LACZ gene, they did not remove the ability for the E. coli bacteria to digest lactose. It just inhibited it. And then when the only ones that were left alive were alive because they had the EBGA gene that was still able to produce enough for it to stay alive, that just encouraged that trait, brother. I mean, you can dance all around it any way you want to, but that is the study that you asked me to look into, and it absolutely disproves your point.
I don't think it does, because what I'm reading says in bacteria that still have the LACZ gene, EBGA does not digest lactose at all. It doesn't produce any enzymes that help in the for the metabolization or whatever of lactose. When they got rid of the other one, this gene, it either got overexpressed, maybe some transcription factors duplicated and then caused it to be overexpressed or whatever. But now it does do that job. It's kind of like a compensatory mutation, essentially.
Does the EBGT gene have the ability to digest lactose? Yes or no? Because one time when you read it, you said
if the bacteria still have LACZ, this is telling me that it doesn't.
It virtually doesn't. So you got to watch the wordings and you got to cross reference, because the people that are trying to you know show that their study is the correct one, they're gonna and I agree with you, they're gonna say it's evolution just like you are, no matter what. But
well, if it changes, that's evolution.
Yeah, and that's where we're gonna disagree. But if you just type in regular does just normal EBC, saying it all over the place now, does it have the ability to digest lactose? And the answer is going to be yes, although it is very small. That's my point. It already had the ability to do it before the LACZ gene was removed. It just didn't have to because the LACZ gene was doing it. That didn't mean that it didn't have the ability at all.
So this is cut off a little bit, but this is, I don't know if this is the study, but it's a study. Wild type EBG beta encoded by EBGA is a catalytically feeble enzyme that does not hydrolyze lactose or other beta galactosidase efficiently enough to permit growth on those substrates.
Go. Efficiently. So it does still have the ability. It just doesn't do it efficiently. It still has the ability. It's just not very efficient. You know what makes it more efficient is when you remove the primary source of it and then it's forced to do all of it by itself. That's why the majority.
Well, no, not necessarily. The bacteria could just have easily have just simply gone extinct. There's no reason for that gene to overexpress.
Yes, it is. That's what you're pushing it to do. That's exactly why it would overexpress.
No, that's Lamarckism. You're doing orthogenesis now.
It has the ability to digest lactose. It already had that ability, and now it didn't have to carry the weight before because it had another gene doing it. That gene was removed, and now it's the only one doing it. Most of the E. coli bacteria died out because it couldn't produce enough, just like you and I are different body shapes and types.
So
you
might be then why didn't all of the so you just disproved intelligent design again?
I've already told you that.
If intelligent design is true, then all of the bacteria should have evolved in order to have their EBGA gene now accommodate for this loss of the lac operon. If intelligent design is true, that's what you would expect to happen. Except it didn't. A microscopic minority of the bacteria somehow serendipitously evolved to where this gene now functions in a way that it didn't before.
But you just said something. It does not function in a way that it didn't before. It's doing exactly what it was doing before. But just like microevolution, which we already talked about yesterday, it's just a trait that's exaggerated that already existed before. It's nothing but dogs with longer hair, brother. Now, here's what I did. I come in here and I told you, hey, brother, when I said something yesterday, I misspoke. I do believe that my premise was still the same, but I misspoke. Here's what I'm also doing. You gave me a study to look at, and you said that it was absolutely genetic information gain. And I'm showing you that it's not, because that information already existed. And clearly,
the information has to change.
It didn't change.
It did, though.
It had the ability to eat lactose before.
If I translate a paragraph from English into Spanish, it's still the same story, right? But the information necessarily has to change in order for it to go from English to Spanish. This example is more extreme than that. Humans can't live off of grass. However, I am fairly certain that if you and your identical twin were stranded somewhere and you had no food, but one of you just ate grass because you didn't see any other point and the other person did nothing, I bet the one of you that eats grass is going to survive a little bit longer than the other one, even though you're both eventually going to die. So apparently you can get a tiny little something out of eating grass. That's not the same thing as having the actual ability to metabolize, cellulose in a way that allows you to survive on it. These bacteria this gene does not allow the bacteria to survive on glucose. It has incredibly feeble enzymatic activity. But then it evolved to a point where, I don't know, it kicked into overdrive or something. I'll have to read more of the abstract here to see exactly what's going on. That absolutely represents a change in information, because evolution is descent with modification. It can only work if you have pre-existing genetic material and it gets modified.
And I would tell you that it's not changing the information. The information already exists. It's taken pre-existing information.
It has to mutate. It has to mutate for this to work.
Information that already existed. If I have another arm right here, we talked about this yesterday. If I grow another arm, it's the same information that my. It's not new information. It's just a jumbled up mess of information that got coded wrong. It didn't write new code.
That would be new information. That's like saying if I take all the words of a book and put them in different places, the book still says the same thing. No, it does not. It absolutely does not. The information is changed. This is just a goalpost shift to assert that evolution can never happen.
We're just going to argue over definition, so we'll have to get past that. But let me ask you, do you know me outside of TikTok here?
I don't think so.
Okay. I have an identical twin, so when you said that, I thought you might have actually...
Oh, really? No, I just totally made that example up off the top of my head.
I was like, wait a minute, does this cat actually know? No, I mean, I'm not hiding or nothing. I was like, wait a minute. But yeah, so we're just going to get now stuck on definitions, and I don't want to do that. So I'm going to show you where the example you gave doesn't fit what you said, and then you're just going to claim that it does. So I don't think we're going to be able to go anywhere from here, brother.
That's possible.
But hey, listen, man, I've enjoyed the conversation. You sound educated, and passionate in it. So, you know, maybe we'll be able to do it again sometime.
I do have passions, yes.
Well, all right, brother. It's been good, okay?
Thank you. Yeah, it was a good conversation.
All right, brother. I'll be praying for you, man. I hope you have a good one.
Later. Oh, Debate Doc is back. I'm sure he's pissed because he probably wanted to talk to that guy, but we'll let Debate Doc say whatever they want to say.
Oh, dang. Yeah, no, I did want to talk to him. No, there are a couple of solid examples of evolution, in bacteria, obviously, but humans too. And you guys were talking about like lactose tolerance, and lactose, the development of lactose tolerance in humans is actually a great example of like modern evolution. Because like no other mammal is like lactose tolerant beyond like infancy.
Yeah.
But humans, some populations of humans are lactose tolerant, and it's only populations of humans that were historically dependent on like milk from livestock. So you can see it in like, you know, a lot of Europe and then like Mongolians and stuff like that, but you don't see it in places where they weren't dependent on milk from livestock, like, you know, East Asia.
They're just going to say, oh, we could digest lactose and now we still can. That's not new information. That's what they say every time.
Wait, what?
So when you're a baby, you can digest lactose, and then as an adult, you still can. That's not new information. That's not evolution. That's what they always say.
No, there's a whole gene for lactose tolerance. That's crazy. But yeah, so anyway, that's a good one. But there's actually a video, I think it's from Harvard, that shows the development of antibiotic resistance in real time. So they have this like population of bacteria. I mean, it's like sped up, but they have a population of bacteria and they put it on like the end of this like large like agar plate or something like that, that's impregnated with antibiotics. It's either different antibiotics or antibiotics of like increasing strength.
It's the black one where it goes to the middle.
Yeah.
I've used that a bunch of times before.
Okay. Well, then none of this information I gave you was helpful. I apologize. But
yeah, I thought it was really actually, I don't know why I've never thought of this before, but when I was talking to him, he really did debunk intelligent design, because if intelligent design were true, then all of the bacteria should have evolved to have this gene overcompensate. But instead, just a tiny portion of them did. So that the bacteria could just have easily have never evolved it, because there's no guarantee of it.
Yeah, or I mean, like, you know, antibiotic resistance genes, like, you know, some of our antibiotics are derived from like penicillium mold or something like that. So, you know, you can understand some bacteria having, you know, like beta lactamase or something like that. And that being kind of like a natural thing. But some of our antibiotics are like entirely synthetic. So why would these bacteria be designed with these, you know, resistance genes to something like vancomycin, for example, right? This like synthetic antibiotic makes no sense.
Because God is omniscient, so he knew that would happen.
Boom. Fair enough.
they got an answer for everything.
But like, I don't think that existed, you know, prior to our development of vancomycin. So I guess it was just latent somewhere out in the ether. But that might be a decent one. But I mean, I guess if they've got a retort for everything, then, you know.
So apparently in that study, I brought up this. What's really fun, I'm actually super glad that he came up, because I've been aware of that study for years, but I actually haven't been able to find it for some reason. I read about it in a book, but the book didn't give like a citation for whatever reason. So then by Googling this, I actually found maybe it's been done more than once, but I actually found it. So this is saying here, the genetic sequence of the EBGA gene, which is the one that was still there, that was too weak, but now allows them to live off lactose, is actually 50% different at the DNA level from the wild type version of that gene. And it is only 33% identical at the amino acid level. So
So yeah, clearly some evolution of that gene.
That shows these are homologous but distinct genes, not duplicates of one another. Well, it's a mutated version of the gene.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if I replaced all the letters in a sentence one by one, eventually it just becomes a completely new sentence, but you'd have to argue. What I love to do with this, do I have text on here? Yes, I do. It currently says my rebuke counter. I'm going to change this. This is my favorite example to use.
I did like his Lamarckian evolution idea.
Yeah,
they just struggled enough until it got better. Each individual bacterium.
All right. Do these two things mean the same thing? Oh, YouTube, you can't see this.
No.
No, these are radically different. She enjoys laughter and he enjoys slaughter. Mean completely different things. But you know what's awesome about this? All I did was take the S and move it from there to there. It's the same it's not new information, right?
Yeah, I mean, same letters just rearranged slightly differently.
It's not new information, except this means something completely different. And yeah. When we have mutations to genes that can gain new functions, that's a change. And this video and all my videos is on my Patreon ad-free, and you can get a free copy of my first book by being a member too. Plus, your name will appear in the end credits. Thank you.